This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Good morning, Tuscaloosa. Internet world, West Alabama. How are we doing today on this Thursday? It is the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central, BamaCentral.com. You guys are checking us out on the Bama Central YouTube channel. You're checking us out on the Bama Central Facebook page, on my own social media machines at JoeGaither6. You can find us right there, or you can find us on your favorite podcast platform, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Amazon. Subscribe, rate, and review the show, the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. We do it each and every weekday live in the Derek Daniels State Farm Studios, and that is exactly where we are right now to get into this Thursday edition of the show with our friend Mason Woods. You follow Mason Woods at MAWoods_ on the Twitter machine. We're going to have a lot of fun with Mason. We're going to have a lot of fun with Katie Windham. We're going to have a lot of fun with you. You can leave us a comment at JoeGaither6 or leave us a voicemail at 205-462-7340, extension 800. If you want to be a part of the show, you can leave us a voicemail. Talk about tonight's NFL draft. Talk about Jack Samarco, new transferee. Kalen DeMore breaking out the big bucks to bring in Jack Samarco. No, we'll talk about that. You guys can get in on that conversation by using the voicemail line or finding us on the comment section on any of the platforms that you like to use. Don't worry, I'm checking them all. And with that, we're gonna have a lot of fun with Mason Woods. Good morning, sir. How we doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Excited for the draft. You know, I told you a while back, I have fully accepted Cam Ward is a Titan, and he will win a Super Bowl one day.
I know.
Future Super Bowl champion Cam Ward. So it's happening. Book it, folks. I'll be back in studio tomorrow with a tattoo on my forehead.
Tattoo on your forehead and, what, $140 lighter as you've already ordered the jersey?
Yeah.
Yeah. I am actually on the hook this year for our Bears podcast. We've done the last 3 years. One of the co-hosts has bought a set of three jerseys.
Oh, wow.
And so this year it will be my...
It's going to run you $1,000.
Well, I'm probably going to use the same site that my co-host used the other year. It was from, well, shoot, the tariffs. I probably won't get them.
Oh, man.
I didn't even think about that. I wasn't trying to be political. I did not even think about that.
You genuinely may not be able to order counterfeit jerseys from China at this moment.
I think my Caleb Williams jersey cost my co-host, and not saying he's cheap, but this is what he should do.
That's the way I would have done it, yeah.
I think it cost him like $40.
Yeah, I've got four or five, you know, knockoff jerseys that very likely came off the same assembly line as the ones that Fanatics is selling.
Oh, I'll have to figure that out, actually. But we'll find out. We come together as a group on the draft night show, so Monday for us, and we're all, okay, here's the guys. If the Bears draft this guy, we're not buying his jersey.
You, okay.
But these three guys, if they draft this guy, and if he falls outside of those three guys, I'll just end up getting us all Kyler. You know, we just re-signed Kyler Gordon, yep. And we'll get Kyler Gordon. They're like, I don't know if I want to get an offensive lineman's jersey if they take Kelvin Banks. So it's going to be an interesting night. It's going to be a fun night.
Three? If you don't want to, you don't have to tell us.
No.
We want you to go listen.
I'm sure everybody here is dying to go listen to the Believe in Monsters podcast where I sit there and troll my other
two. Give us just one of them. It's got to be Genty, right?
Yeah, it's Genty. It's Genty. It's if Abdul Carter falls or the Bears trade up,
yeah.
And it's Mason Graham.
I like that. No. No Tyler Booker. He's not going to be there. He's going to be way later. Crazy.
Tyler was on my list. Yeah. I said, hey, guys, in 3 months ago,
it was, he was on everybody's list seemingly 3 months ago as, you know, being that kind of upper mid first round pick, but not looking like it's going to happen.
I think some serious concerns about his athleticism, which I think is a silly thing to be concerned about.
For guard, yeah. I mean, how much is he moving on a given play?
Just maul the man.
Yeah, he's going, what, 5 to 7 yards maybe? And he's not having to move really laterally that much. You know, it's not like he's having to cover wide ground like a tackle does. I understand athleticism is important, but it might be overrated a bit at guard.
Yeah, somebody's going to get themselves a really quality offensive lineman at the top of the second round, and you're going to be 5 years in being like, how do we get this guy? He's not a first round. Oh yeah. He's not a first rounder. We don't have the fifth year option on him. We do have to sign him to a contract extension right now or franchise tag him, which we won't want to do it because he's a guard. So we need to buck up. So Tyler, I mean,
you know,
short-term pain, it'll work out better for Tyler if he can get to that second contract a little faster.
My Titans will be picking at the top of the second round.
Oh,
and, you know, we talked about this right before we started recording. They did just sign Tyler Lockett last night, and I was saying, I hope that that does not mean they will not be drafting a receiver, but if that means they draft Tyler Booker there at the beginning of the second round, I'll be pretty dang happy.
Hey, Tyler Booker, J.C. Latham up front.
You got, what's his name, Skoronski from Northwestern, who has been solid. He hasn't quite fit the bill yet, but I think he's still building there. I'd feel pretty good about that front.
No Derrick Henry in the backfield. I'm just thinking about the Alabama connections. Is Latham the only Bama boy on the team right now?
I believe him to be, yes.
Don't worry.
Calvin Ridley.
Okay, great, great, great. Yeah, oh, dude. Booker right there. Put him right there. Yes. Oh, yeah,
that'd be great. Good times. Get you a good front for your rookie quarterback that will be winning you a Super Bowl within the next 2 years.
Good luck.
I believe that wholeheartedly.
Good luck.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good. We're going to have a good draft. Man, I, from an Alabama perspective, it genuinely will not be all that interesting to watch, I think. If you're watching just to see Alabama guys get their names called tonight,
yeah, find a movie.
Yeah, you maybe want to pick in something else. But if you're just a draft fan, I do think it will be an interesting draft because I don't think there's a lot of consensus outside of maybe the top two or three picks.
Yeah, and I think the consensus, what, a week or so ago, like my Bears co-host, he follows it like he puts everybody that I know to shame because he's like consuming all the content. So last week he's telling me, yeah, buddy, everything is pretty much set. Out to, you know, 1 through 8 or so. So the Bears, you know, because we're trying to decide what's going to be there. And he's like, all these blue chip prospects are going to be gone. We're going to have to take Tyler Warren at 10. And it's just like, oh my gosh, I am. So his assessment, and I think this is from The Athletic as well, is that Brian Baldinger mm-hmm. says, this is not a superstar draft. This is a starter's draft.
Kind of what
you
I
need
see.
To come away with 3 to 5 starters.
What team is it looking for starters?
Well, we're all looking for starters. Know, hey,
pretty good. I'll take starters.
Yeah.
I think it's
tough to get excited from an Alabama perspective just because you're looking at Jihad Campbell as your surefire number one. And I don't want to have to experience what we will likely have to experience starting at, what time does the draft start? 7, 6?
Mm-hmm. I think 7.
Starting at 5:30. You're gonna get the camera in the green room on Jalen Milroe.
Yes, you will.
And it's gonna be on him all night. And it's going to be on a, and like, I am really hoping that someone has just fallen in love with his athleticism and we don't have to do, yeah, we don't have to do this. Well, it's pick 28 and mm-hmm. Jalen Milroe's still looking at his cell phone. It's pick 31. He's still looking at his cell phone. Oh, I don't want to have to wake up tomorrow morning and Jalen Milroe got snubbed. He is going to go back to the green room tonight. He's not going to go back to the green room tonight, whatever the case may be. That story is going to be uncomfortable.
I think the Eagles should just draft him at 32 and let him back up Jalen Hurts.
Well, you sent me to a text that Dak sent me last week when we were talking about the Lions. I don't know if this was with you or with Hunter and Theo, but he says, hey, man, can't you see Jalen Milroe tush push? I said, oh my God. I said, yeah. I didn't text this back to him, but I said, not Jalen Hurts, but Jalen Milroe will be the one that gets the play banned. It gets the play banned from the NFL. Everybody thinks it's Hurts, but it's going to be Jalen Milroe behind the backs of that Detroit offensive line. And it's just like Dan Campbell, 1st and 10 for Milroe tush push.
6 yards. What? That would be, I mean, just
2nd and 4.
You want a tush push specialist? You got one right there, buddy. Like, hey, you're going to play 7 snaps a game, but they're going to be crucial to our success.
The most important 7 snaps that we have. Dan Campbell's over there salivating. Yeah. Tush push again. Tush push again. Jalen, you got another one in you, Jalen?
Yeah, coach, I can always do it. I'm just happy to be here.
So I think Dax was on
the Lions.
I can hear it now.
A heart. Ma. And every time, like, I will kill myself watching those Bears Lions game because it's like, all right, we got him at 3rd-and-2 again.
Here he comes. Here comes the rookie in for his first snap as a Lion.
And it's tush push for 1.5 yards. Oh, it's 4th-and-a-half yard. Great. They're going to punt. No.
Dan Campbell over there with a scowl on his face.
Again, he's just hitting the button. He's just mashing. Dude, I have gotten to a place on my, and call EA Sports, you got to do something about this. I'm playing on Heisman mode, and I'm calling one damn play. The blocking, I'm just leaving the, it's duo. God. You call a little duo action, watch the lineman, just get in there and just weave right through there. And it's like, I don't even have to call a second play because duo gets blocked so nicely.
This is how most EA games kind of devolve in my experience over the last maybe decade. Any bit of, like, if you get into any bit of actual competitive play against anybody.
Yeah, I found the five.
There's 4 or 5 plays, and it's like, if you're not running those plays, you will lose because everyone else is running those plays because those are the ones that work because they coded the game poorly.
I need a defensive coverage glitch play. I've got 3 or 4 blitz glitch plays.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there is one.
But and I've looked them up. The problem is you can't do all the adjustments, pre-snap adjustments, fast enough,
dude. Oh, you see though, I've seen clips of those guys, and yeah, it's like, I mean, cycling through, but they've all got
two or three down to
muscle memory. Like they're not even sitting there like going. They know exactly what they're doing every play, and it's just it's crazy. Yeah, those games really get in. They suck all the fun out of it at the highest level, kind of.
All right, so I saw Jalen Milroe draft odds because we need to get moving here, and we're going to have Katie Windham join us about 8:40. We want to play the game, Mason Woods, as I pull up his draft odds because I did see this earlier. I might have hit a like on it, so that's probably a good place to start.
Yeah, the tush push really does pose an interesting perspective there because, you know, it kind of reminds me of the, like, funny hypothetical that everybody throws out of, like, if you had a punter that you could guarantee pinned a team inside the 10 every punt, would you draft him in the first round? And it's like, well, that'd be potentially the most valuable thing you could have. And if you got a guy that, hey, we need 4 yards or less, he's going to get it 9 times out of 10. That is supremely valuable. And why would you pass on it? I mean, that's very interesting. I don't think a team would do that. Draft him in the first round just to say, hey, we're going to use you for tush push. But man, that play could be that valuable.
This is from our friend, maybe our friend one day, Miss Kay Adams, tweeting new odds for Jalen Milroe on FDS Sportsbook. Cleveland Browns plus 230, Giants plus 380, Steelers the 410, Saints at 500, Jets at 550, and Rams at 650. Those are terrible places.
Yeah. Not a fan of really any of those.
So except for Pittsburgh. Yeah. That's my only spot.
Yep, that's the only one. Browns would be such a disaster. I mean, you know, they might be able to make... He would
replace Deshaun almost instantly from a leadership perspective.
Sure.
And you would put the Browns brass would be in a position of, do we cut bait on this albatross of a contract because he's not the team leader anymore and he's not really our quarterback because Jalen Milroe has come in and put him in the little boy chair on the side because that's what he would do. I'm sorry. I think Jalen's personality would, oh, you're Deshaun and nobody likes you? People like me. Mm-hmm.
he has a gravitational pull about him. Jalen Milroe does.
You don't want that. You don't want that controversy, right? Now if you're the Browns, because you don't have to write out the albatross of a contract that you
right
have.
Now. Yes, you are in a horrible, horrible spot with that. But just write it out. You made your bed. Now you have to lie in it. Mm-hmm. Although Kevin Stefanski has done a fair amount with. Not much at the quarterback position over the last 2 seasons or so. It wouldn't shock me that if Jalen Milroe did go there, he could maybe get something out of him. I don't know that it would be long-term, you know, a long-term quarterback option or anything like that, but as far as a bridge for a little bit, he'd probably get somewhat serviceable play. I just don't think that'd be a great fit because, yeah, like you said, all of the surrounding culture issues that would bring with it and the, you know, division locker room and everything like that.
Everett Osmer, you're not offending us at all. Katie will be joining us. Everett tweets us on or hits us on the Facebook. I thought Katie was going to join us on Thursdays. No offense. I wanted to hear her thoughts on softball. We want to hear her thoughts on softball. She's going to be about 8:40 or so. 8:40 to about 9:10. We'll have Katie Winham joining us. So hang on tight, Everett. He is going to be, or she is going to be joining us. And then he asked, are y'all excited to see Randy back in the WWE? Absolutely. Randy Orton, opening Monday Night Raw with a nice RKO on John Cena. So that was awesome. I don't think that Jalen, brother, don't, I know, Cleveland at the top of the second round, the Giants at the top of the second round. I don't like his face.
Giants move. You see last night, the GM's son putting out the Jackson Real highlight tape on his Instagram and then immediately locking his Instagram down and going private.
The who, what?
GM Joe Shin. Yeah. His son, who, you know, is everyone kind of rumors that is fairly involved, at least in providing some information to his father about things.
Yes.
It goes on his Instagram page last night and puts out a highlight tape of Jackson Dart just without any caption or anything. And then immediately within minutes locks his account down as private and, you know, just maybe reading the tea leaves a little bit. Who knows? Jackson Dart going to be a first round pick? Would that be the Giants trade out of that top spot back into the mid late first round?
No.
And they snag him there.
You can get him right there at 33 or whatever, 35. It's fine.
But if you want your guy, you got to go get your guy.
That's the most absurd thing in the world. I understand the, I'm in a conflict here. I really want Prospect X. I really, but if you've done your evaluation properly
and you have graded him not worthy of where you're selecting currently, either trade back.
Just trust it. Trust it.
I was joking about the Eagles drafting Jalen Milroe, but I genuinely don't think it's a terrible idea. Their backup quarterback situation is abysmal. Dorian Thompson Robinson and Tanner McKee.
Don't get hurt, Jalen Hurts.
Yeah. I mean, look, Jalen Milroe is not going to, he's not going to give you all exactly what Jalen Hurts is giving you. He'll give you 75% of it. And that'll win you some games.
That tush push aspect, the backup, you can be Taysom Hill, backup tush push. Come in here.
Philly. I mean, come on.
Chicago.
There you go.
We don't want any Caleb Williams tush pushing.
Literally any team. Hey, you don't want your starting quarterback to have to do any tough plays. Here's Jalen Milroe. He'll be happy to do it because he's a team first guy.
You can keep him on the roster as like a specialist kind of alternate quarterback position. And then when it comes up for his contract time and he wants that big money, you can be like, dude, you're not really a quarterback, sort of. Emergency, like you can find some twin. You don't have to pay him $55 million a year. You probably end up working some like $17 million, $8, $9 million, you know.
That's what you do.
We need the draft to be here because we're already suggesting, because we've been doing this for 3 months. What's Jalen Milroe's fit? And now we're here at, every team should draft him as a specialist. we went from,
wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole to, man, I need him on my team now.
Right, but none of us would want him as a starter. We want him as a tush-push specialist.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So well, we're going to ask Katie Winham, over or under 1.5 draft picks tonight. Does Tyler Booker, does Jalen Milroe, do either of them slip into the first round? Because Jahad Campbell, lock, stone-cold lead pipe lock. You want to go to your window and place a wager? Yes, Jahad Campbell will be a first-round draft pick. Will we have another to celebrate this evening?
I think it's just going to be Jahad. I'd have to take the under on that 1.5 line, I think. Because I just, the Steelers feel to me like maybe the most likely team to be interested in Jalen Milroe. But I do not believe the Steelers to be a team that is very much in the business of kind of making these flashy, kind of wacky draft picks like this. It seems like more often than not, they're a little bit more reserved with the way they approach the draft. I understand they took Kenny Pickett a while back, but they were in the top end of the draft, so it kind of made sense there. They were in position for one of the, who was set to be the top quarterback, you know. I think I'd probably ride with the under on that 1.5 line. Jahad is definitely a lock. you know, handful of teams, I think, would certainly be happy to have him there in that like 15 to 20 range, probably maybe a little bit later than that. But he's definitely a first round pick, but I think he might be the only one.
All right, I'll go optimistic. I think somebody's going to try to take the lottery pick, and somebody's going to get themselves a Jalen Milroe at 25, 6, 7, 8, 9. I think they're going to see him slip, and they're like, all right, here's our window to trade back into the first round. They're gonna Lamar Jackson this bad boy. Yeah. And I'm going to say that he does get selected in the first round, partly because I do think that, but mostly for fun. But I think that it's a really a big possibility that he gets picked 27, 8, 9, 10, yeah. 27, 8, 9, 31, 2. All right, I want to ask you about this Tom Pelissero article that got put out yesterday that a lot of Alabama beat writers were aggregating. Control F, because this is 18 quarterbacks in this Tom Pelissero, and I don't care about the other 17. I want his quote. Tom Pelissero ranks him as the fourth best quarterback in the class. But his quotes here are from anonymous scouts and coaches. Bleh.
I hate that.
Put your damn name on it. Here we go. He is the greatest runner in football at the quarterback position I have ever seen. And there's enough talent in the arm to make you want to play an offense that suits that. It's Jalen Hurts. It's Lamar Jackson. It's Colin Kaepernick. There are some guys that have successfully done it, and you have to baby him into the league that way and then let him flourish. Who knows? He has a lot of accuracy issues, but he's a freak. He's the best running quarterback I've ever evaluated. This is a second. This is an AFC quarterback now. The first one was an AFC quarterback's coach. The coordinator continues, but he has a lot of accuracy issues, but he is a freak. He is the best running quarterback I've ever evaluated. He's like Cam Newton's power with Lamar's speed. He can throw the ball down the field. His numbers over 20 yards are good, and he's a true developmental type player. Now, all right, great. Further. Where is my quotes about, right, about coaching staff development? I mean, this is a huge little package. Oh gosh, I'm getting lost in the sauce here. But essentially, I'm looking for the quote where it says all the skill position players would have transferred out if Jalen Milroe didn't go pro, because that's what a lot of people latched onto yesterday. Pelissero writes about Bill O'Brien saying he's not a quarterback. You know, idea that Milroe rejected, he still rejects now. From a playmaking standpoint, he's as good as anybody. This is an NFC assistant coach. The dude's impressive, and he can make big plays, take off, and run. But consistent accuracy is the biggest part of him. He's probably got as much upside, if not more, than anybody in this draft. It's just, can you hone that? All right, I'm getting lost in the sauce, but I wanted to ask you about the quote here, the quote about the skill position players would have had a mutiny, would have transferred out if Jalen Milroe returned to Alabama. We talked about that a little bit around the transfer portal, around the time of the draft, around the time of the draft announcement dates. Lots of mixed reviews yesterday, and the buzz was, you know, no, that's not true. Yes, it is true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a couple months later, where are you landing here? It doesn't matter, but where are you landing?
I believe that would have been the case, probably. I'm not going to say every one of them would have been leaving, but I think you would have seen a fair amount of skill positions hit the transfer portal had Jalen Milroe return for another year. I think we really started to see that frustration start to bubble over at the end of last season, especially with, you know, Ryan Williams, Jeremy Bernard. Obviously, I don't know. I'm not in the building. I think everybody liked Jalen Milroe personally. I don't think anybody had any personal issues with him. I think they were all friends, you know, but I think that the very obvious quarterback inconsistencies, deficiencies started to rear their head at the end of the season, and it really started to bubble over a bit, and that frustration was, you know, you were seeing it on the field a little bit at times.
That aspect, the frustration bubble over, that's the reason that I don't want to see what might happen tonight, because I don't know what Jalen's people have told him. Hey, you're going 12. You're going 25. Well, I don't know what expectations they have set for him. But if he's expecting to go in the top 15 and doesn't, what will his face say in the green room? I mean, will his face look better or worse than on the sideline at Oklahoma?
We will have to see.
I think probably about the same.
One thing.
I don't want to experience the pouty face Jalen on my TV screen for 3 hours.
Yeah, I don't want to see that. Something in this little rundown here that he gives on Milroe with all these quotes from all these executives and whatever, it really jumped out to me is that you do a little control F scout. All of the quotes in there that are directly from scouts, the people that actually watch the players and watch them play and watch the tape, none of them like him very much. None of them are saying, he's the best runner I've ever seen. He's like Cam Newton, Lamar Jackson. None of them are saying
it's that. All coaches who see 2 minutes of highlights.
Bingo. It is all people who do not. Their job is not to scout players. Their job is not to go on the road 200 days a year.
That could be fun.
Yes, they see a highlight package that their kid showed them on Instagram, and he says, oh, man, that looks pretty good. Those opinions mean nothing to me. Those are not the people getting paid to evaluate players. They're getting paid to coach players on the field.
All right, so back to 2 minutes ago. I would not risk my – like. I could be in the room and you could tell me tush push specialist and I could say, what are we doing with that? Besides that, are we getting any more value than that?
It's pretty valuable though. I mean, you guarantee me a first down on third and short.
Yeah, but I got to babysit the real quarterback. I got to coach the real quarterback.
That's okay. I think he'll be okay with not having to run a QB sneak.
And then I got to manage egos and emotions of, hey, you're not a real quarterback. You're our special. You're a tush push specialist.
I believe Jalen Milroe was probably the right quarterback to handle that.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm very much talking myself into this. I mean,
I'm not there yet. Keep going.
Jalen Milroe is the personality type to, yeah, whatever's best for the team. That's fine with me. I'll just do that. And any quarterback worth their weight is not going to want to put their body on the line and run those QB sneaks because there's only one quarterback built like Jalen Hurts. I think it kind of works for both sides there. I don't think you're going to have a starting quarterback come in and say their ego is bruised because I didn't get to run a third and two QB sneak and put my body on the line
but
and
how
risk
long
missing
would,
the rest of the year.
How long would Jalen be satisfied with that role?
As long as he's getting a big paycheck.
Okay. Maybe. That might be true.
Yeah. And that's just me, though. I don't know, Jalen. I would, from everything Jalen has shown us at Alabama, I think he's pretty okay just being like, yeah, whatever works for the team, man. I'm happy. I don't know. I think he might take that role and just kind of roll with it because his prospects otherwise, I don't know.
Yikes. Yikes, yikes, yikes. All right. I think I've exhausted this topic until we get to Katie.
Yeah, probably. That was funny to me, though, that Tom Pelissero gathers all of these quotes to paint this narrative that the NFL loves Jalen Milroe as this underrated gem, when in reality, if you just dig a little deeper, the people who are actually evaluating players, they're not big fans.
So how much of this is lying season. You've got people, he's the greatest runner I've ever seen.
It's just not true.
They are praying that their rival drafts him in the first round. Yeah. And they're like, hell yeah, I'm going to be picking that joker off for 3 years until he's out of the league.
Precisely.
No.
That's such a preposterous statement that Jalen Milroe is the best runner you've seen.
Ever?
It's so insane.
I mean, Cam was unstoppable.
Jalen Hurts. I mean, hell, Jalen Hurts looked like a better runner sometimes.
Cam Newton, the LSU run, the run over LSU where he runs through like all the middle of those people
and hits that. Golly.
Oh. Jalen Milroe does that in his dreams.
Yes.
I mean, sure, 40-yard dash, you want to put him straight line speed and put him next to Cam Newton.
Justin Fields might have a better runner than Jalen Milroe was. Is.
I'm not sure about that. Maybe, but I don't know if I'll go that far.
He is far from the best running quarterback you've ever seen.
Exactly.
That's so insane.
Like, I know I was a child, but I saw Michael Vick.
Golly. Yeah. I mean, come on. What are we doing, people? What are we talking about?
He's athletic. Jalen's athletic. He can run. He's fast. But that special, that extra little, that, holy. Bleep, he really did that?
Yeah. He does not. Jalen Milroe never once really showed me that. It was
He did it once against Arkansas. You've come in to replace an injured Bryce Young.
Yeah.
It's third and 17 or third and 8, whatever it was, third and long, and he just 95 yards. I'm going to run it all the way to the goal line. That was a special run. Can I think of another one special run? I mean, you've got long runs against LSU last year.
But it's all just get me to the outside.
Perfectly blocked. Yes. Not touched. Not touched.
Didn't have to make anybody miss. He just doesn't have – he does not have the – the shiftiness of a Lamar Jackson, Cam Newton, Michael Vick, like any of those running quarterbacks, any running quarterback you can think of. Jaden Daniels, another one. Like, I don't know. He doesn't have that. He does not have that wiggle to his game. He is a straight line speed guy. And that straight line speed is fast, but it takes him a little bit to get there, and it's got to be blocked up real well.
All right, let's shift gears here before we bring on Miss Katie Windham. We're going to talk about a new tight end. Warren Tire and Auto, they've been a Tuscaloosa and University of Alabama staple since 1961. They're your go-to place for all your automotive need. They've got two great locations to serve you on 15th Street and on University Boulevard. For tires, brakes, and alignment, you can see them on 15th Street. Check them out, 205-759-5505. Or for all your other automotive needs, you can check them out on University Boulevard at 205-758-2739. Two great locations to get you in and out back on the road. That's Warren Tire, your go-to place for all your automotive needs. All right, Mason, let's talk about Jack Samarco. Jack. Special Jack. Special Jack Samarco transfers in from West Virginia and is almost exactly like we were talking about this week with tight ends. One reception. But my man's played in all 13 games for West Virginia last year. One catch. Yeah. 6'6". 240-ish, 260 maybe. Yeah,
he looks pretty big. I saw ESPN. I don't know what West Virginia had him listed at. I saw ESPN. He was 238, I think, on their little roster page for West Virginia. This man is not 238 pounds.
Okay, Jack. So, what does it do for Alabama?
It clogs some things up. Fills a need?
No, it doesn't clog things up. Well, maybe. It depends, I guess, what's your perspective. Does it clog up your Y tight end? Yes. Does it sort some things out with your U tight end? Well, no, Y is in line and U is on the move, right?
You're asking the wrong man.
Google that because it's going to drive me crazy. Inline tight end, Y or U? I think it's U. No, it's Y because the move tight end is U.
You are correct.
Yeah. The move tight end is you. The inline tight end is Y. So, Jack, you are Y. Why are we having you, Jack? Because we need a Y.
But did we? Anyway, we went through it the other day.
I guess.
They don't like our homegrown talent here, Jaden Hobson.
We got to get Jamie Mitchell on to talk about Jaden Hobson.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be a good idea. Jamie, Coach Mitchell, we'll see if we can get you on, talk about him for a couple minutes. I just think that they're probably, hey, we need more.
Sure.
I just think that you didn't feel good about it. Yeah. You didn't feel about a transfer from Mississippi State who was an offensive lineman. Oh, can we play you tight end? I don't know.
Yeah. I think that's obvious, you know, from just them going to get someone. They did not like the options they had there. So, I'm going to trust the evaluation of the coaching staff that gets paid lots of money.
Type this Joker's name in the internet and see what comes up as far as film goes and you make your evaluation.
Yeah, I
mean, come on. Don't do that to yourself.
Yeah. I think it'll be fine. You know, that if this was a need for Alabama, a replacement for a Robbie Oots, you know, that role last year. So if you did not feel comfortable about any of the players you currently have on the roster taking over that role, which obviously they didn't, they went and got somebody that they think can take over that role. So that's fine with me. We talked about tight end, you know, after A-Day being a spot where we thought they may target for transfer portal, and they did exactly that.
So I guess this means that Brody Dalton, the tight end from Troy, has missed his boat. What I think it is, this is total speculation, but you had a couple Y tight ends in the market that you were looking for, and they probably said, this is the offer, bud, take it or leave it. And Jack Samarco said, I'll take that. And there we go. Yeah, the rest is history. I mean, do you see Alabama doing much more shopping?
I don't either. I think, you know, we've talked about it with the players on Alabama's roster as far as entering the portal. Like, the market's dried up at this point, pretty much. Most of the guys that are guys are they've already been out of school for, you know, 10 days now. And then anybody you're really looking for at this point is just going to be kind of supplemental pieces. And I don't really know where Alabama needs any of those anymore.
Will Jackson Marco appear in every game this year?
Wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would not shock me one bit to see him just getting in there and cracking some skulls.
Over under. 2.5 or 3.5? 2.5 or 3.5? 3.5 receptions for Jackson Marco this year. 3.5 checkdowns, dump offs.
Oh,
Utes got 20 something.
Yeah, say, what did Utes get last year?
Dupree got 20 something, and Utes got like 15 or 12 something.
That being said, we don't have Jalen Milroe back at quarterback anymore.
We're going to get a check down.
Potentially a lot less dump offs, but I have to think Ty Simpson will be a fan of the check down. I'll take the over on that. I'd take the over. I'd give him, I think I'd give him somewhere between 7 and 10 receptions on the season for, we're going to call it 38 yards.
Well, then national champions. That was the missing ingredient, yeah, right there.
We'll say seven catches for 38 yards and one touchdown.
Bama
and
was.
That touchdown is in the title game.
Bama was 7 receptions away. Now, national champions. Here we go. All right, let's change gears. Let's get an expert's opinion on Jackson Marco. We're going to turn our attention to Katie Windham, BamaCentrals.com's leading writer. You can follow Katie Windham at KatieWindham_. Before I do that, though, I did fix our Warren Tire ad. So, Mason, give me your review on this music. Hopefully it won't copyright us.
So, my name is Russ Warren, and I'm one of the owners here at Warren Tire. We started in 1961. My granddad... on University Boulevard, so we've been kind of a staple here in the Tuscaloosa and the University of Alabama community since then, and so thankful to be in the third generation. And we have two locations now in Tuscaloosa. We're right here at the 15th Street location right now, where we just do tires, brakes, and alignments mostly here. Our university location does oil changes, engine work, air conditioning work, front end work, the whole nine yards. And so any of our two locations, you can come check us out.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
All right, we're live here in the Derek Daniels State Farm Studios, and we're about to get a whole lot smarter with Katie Windham. Katie Windham joins us on Thursdays. You follow her already at KatieWindham_ on the Twitter machine, covering literally every sport at the Capstone, leading us at BamaCentral.com. She had a busy weekend last week watching Alabama and Florida. Going to get into Alabama and Missouri. We're going to get into the NFL draft. We're going to get into Jackson Marco and more with Miss Katie Windham. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, guys.
Katie, what do we want to start with? Let's start with the game we started with today. Over or under, it's the NFL draft night tonight. 1.5 Alabama players selected in the first round.
That's tough. This is such a weird, like, first-round draft class for Alabama, because you normally pretty much know cut and dry, okay, these guys are first-round picks because they're obvious, like, top 20 picks. And then maybe there's one guy that's, like, fringe. But this year, it's like, theoretically, all three of these guys could go in the first round, or, like, all of them have issues that could drop them out of the first round. So it's like, I don't think there will be zero, but it's like, technically there could be. So I'll take – the over on 1.5.
Katie and I are both going over. Somebody's swinging that Jalen Milroe ticket.
I mean, it would make sense. You know, it doesn't make sense to wait on it. If you can, like, just get back into the end of the first round to grab that, go ahead, you know. So I could see that.
Katie, we've been debating Jalen Milroe's fit in the NFL for the last 3 months, really. But one of our listeners texted me the other day and threw an idea about Jalen Milroe utilized as a tush-push specialist. Would that be enough of an enticement, along with all the physical traits, to get somebody to take him in the first round? I mean, that's really what we're getting after with the over-under. Will Milroe be a first-rounder or not?
I don't think, I mean, that alone would be the reason why somebody was willing to take a gamble on him, because I feel like maybe that is just as much on the O-line that can create that kind of thing. And there's probably a lot of strong guys in the NFL that could. I mean, obviously, Jalen Milroe is, you know, very athletic and so is different than a lot of those guys. But, yeah, I don't know. It just takes one. It just takes one team to be willing to take that, see his athleticism and say, this is we can mold this guy into what we need him to be. And I thought it was interesting. Joey from the Mizzou site, our sister site that's up there, that talked to Milroe yesterday and tweeted out that clip of him saying his ideal situation is going somewhere where he can sit behind a veteran, which I think that's good, like self-awareness for Jalen that, you know, because he can tend to be a very confident guy that he realizes, I'm not a day one NFL starter. My best situation is going and learning from somebody, having somebody develop me. And, you know, all it takes is that one team. And we don't know what the meetings have been like behind the scenes. We don't know if somebody's just in love with them. And so, yeah, it'll kind of be a fun first round of like, because like I said, we've had some first rounds where we know, okay, Bryce Young's going number one overall. We know XYZ guys are going in the top 10. I mean, I remember there's the year, it was back in the early 2010s, I think, where Alabama had like back-to-back picks, like 11, 12, and 13. Which I don't know. I think D. Milner was one of those picks. So I don't know how well they all turned out. But, you know, it's kind of more certain. So tonight we'll all be, as media people, have to be on the edge of our seats a little more ready to post whenever, you know, something might happen.
So I want to ask you about the third guy that could potentially wind up in the first round that we have not talked about yet, Tyler Booker. This is a guy that, you know, I think many people throughout kind of most of the season last year and even throughout the early draft process thought, oh, this is a first round pick. I know he's a guard. I know the positional value might not be quite there, but he is so good. He's such a good guard that he's probably a locked in first rounder. Then he goes to the combine and, yeah, I mean, underperforms, for lack of a better word. You know, it kind of showed some deficiencies in his athleticism, you know, had a bad day, really. And, you know, now that has potentially dropped him out of the first round. Do you think that, you know, really just kind of, do you think he could sneak into the first round? Do you think a team is going to take a chance on a guy who, you know, I think I told Joe, or like, I don't think athleticism is a trait that guard is necessarily, you know, it's not one that you need super, super bad there. So do you think a team is going to kind of take a chance on Tyler Booker as maybe a less athletic option, but still a very solid player? I mean, because we see it on tape.
I think that's a fair point that maybe his position doesn't always necessarily call for being the most athletic guy on the field. But once again, it's kind of like with Milroe, it's like it just takes the one team that needs a player at that position that's willing to take a chance on him. Because sometimes the combine stats prove a lot and say, yeah, he doesn't have what it takes at the XYZ position, and sometimes they don't. And I'm not an NFL expert or NFL draft expert anywhere close to it. So I don't know, because, you know, well, also Alabama offensive linemen historically have been hit or miss in the NFL draft. There's some guys you thought would go and just kill it in the NFL that haven't. And then there's some that have had a lot of longevity in the NFL. So, it kind of goes back to the whole original question of the over-under. It's like, yeah, we could see three, we could see one, we could see two, we could see zero, technically, just because of Jihad's kind of injury concerns with some teams. And so – I don't know. I will say Tyler Booker was probably, I don't even think we voted on it this past year, but he was probably like the media MVP. He's a great kid, very nice to talk to. So I hope he gets a shot in the first round, especially since he's there.
I hope he gets the right fit for him as well. Katie, we want to have a little fun. I know he doesn't work for Bama Central, but we all love Tony Sakalas, managing editor of Tide Illustrated. And so I know he has been in your ear for the last 3 months about what the Patriots will do tonight. Where has he settled? Obviously, the conversation moves and changes, but put us inside the mind of Tony and the Patriots fans. Where are they settling?
Actually, this is pretty bad. He did tell me yesterday that, like, he knows more about the NFL draft than, like, because he does, like, mock drafts all the time, like, for the Patriots. And so he's like, I know, like, every player at, like, every position. But I actually don't know, because, like, for a while he was going back and forth on, like, Because so much of this draft, I feel like, has changed. Because I feel like it was for a while that, like, Shadur was going to go top three, but then, like, maybe not now. Okay, he says he wants Campbell from LSU for his guy.
But his arms are so short, you know? He can't.
Yeah, that's the part that he's talked about that, like, you know, doesn't have the whatever arm length for off, but, like, he's good. Like, when you watch him play, like, he's good. He has the rest of the traits, you know, of an NFL lineman. So he just said, I'm not thrilled, but I've accepted it. So.
Well, shout out Tony Tsikalas for watching us this morning with his lovely fiance. You can follow Tony at Tony_Tsikalas for all his great work and maybe a Patriots take or two.
What about you, Bears?
Oh. The problem with them being at 10 is you're right on the outside of the really, really good prospects. The latest rumors that I've been hearing is the Bears have a trade in place with the Jaguars to move to 5 for Ashton Jeanty.
Okay.
If that is a bad rumor, which it very well could be, I think that Tyler Warren is probably going to be the pick at 10, which doesn't bother me. I mean, great. More weapons for Caleb. Great. Let's see what happens. They're probably all going to bust in Chicago anyways. So great.
we're all just in for a lot of surprises tonight. Who knows?
Exactly. I'd like to ask you about a concept, Katie, that I heard this week. Obviously, we're familiar with the draft. Oh, you've got injury concerns. Player X has injury concerns. Player Y has off-the-field concerns, whatever the reason. Scouts have said this week that there is a third category that they have now created for, I guess, red flags. Not injury concerns, not off-the-field concerns, but he doesn't love football. What in the world has NIL poisoned the love of these for these players, and the NFL teams are able to detect it and scratch these players off their boards? What has happened to the game we love?
I mean, if some of these guys are motivated by money, then that's going to be you're into the NFL where you have potentially, you know, bigger contracts. But I think it's just distorted a lot of these guys' minds because of what, maybe not even what they thought, but what their agent or their parents have been telling them. Because you've heard so many stories the last couple of weeks, which once again, it's hard to know exactly what's true. And I feel like this has been more actually on the basketball side, because obviously, like y'all were talking about before I came on, there just hasn't been a ton of football portal movement. But like where a guy has agreed to an NIL number, or even like Chad Baker Mazzara at Auburn, and then either gets something better from somewhere else or agrees to number with their school, both sides are good. And then the player says, actually I want more. And it's like, instead of like, you know, which it's tough, because if you can make hundreds of thousands of dollars more, millions more as a 20-year-old, I mean, I would have done that when I was 20. I'd probably do it now. Like, but it's like, I think it has taken away from, okay, what am I here to do? Like, I think a guy's more worried about making more money than being on a team that could win a championship or trying to win a national championship, or like, cause that's why, I mean, part of why Alabama was so good for so long and why Saban was, I mean, he was obviously a good recruiter anyway, but it's like, you're giving the guys that come here pretty much, I mean, literally Alabama had an 80% success rate of making the playoff in the 14 format. They made it 8 out of 10 years. So it's like, you're almost guaranteeing a guy that he's going to play in the college football playoff, have a shot at a national championship during the peak of the Saban era, win a national. I mean, every recruit that was a four-year guy until last year's class under Saban won a national championship. And so it's like, and now I think a lot of guys, it's not necessarily who's going to develop me the best to get to the NFL one day, or how can I win a championship, but how can I make the most money right now? Which, depending on your circumstances, you know, that may be what you need, but I think it's just short-sighted and probably has, I don't want to be like old man yells at cloud, but like, probably has taken away the love of the game from some of these guys, and just not also old man yells at cloud, but like kids these days, you know, aren't necessarily, I think I've talked about this with our boss, Christopher Walsh, before about like these college age kids right now were in, which is crazy, like in high school and middle school when COVID was happening, and got used to not even having to do schoolwork because there's so many ways, like they weren't in school and just everything got more lax. And so then that's how they want everything to be in life, for them to be able to half do stuff. And, you know, I feel like I'm on a.
Hey, you're wide open.
Keep going. Nail on the head, though.
I think there's a lot of factors that go into it. I had not seen that story or reporter video or whatever you're talking about, but that is interesting that some, Because, you know, you would hope if you're drafting a player, especially if you're drafting him high and giving him millions and millions of dollars, you would hope that he loves the game and it's not just going to quit, stop trying when things get hard. Because especially, you know, some of these guys go from being the peak of their sport, like a Bryce Young, to go into the Panthers, and not that Bryce ever won a national championship, started Alabama, but won the Heisman, was on some very good teams. Mm-hmm. So you go to the Panthers as the first overall pick, and you don't have a good offense around you, and you get lit up every Sunday, you know? So it's like, you have, if you're Bryce Young, you have to love the game of football, or it'd be easy to mentally, you know, just fold after stuff like that happens.
I think you're exactly right. You know, as much as me and Joe say it every time we get into this conversation, like, oh, I know we sound like old men here, but like, it is a kind of pervasive issue, I think. And I also had not seen that report about the players not, but like, I do believe that that is certainly a thing now. And I know, you know, people say that talent trumps everything, and it does at the end of the day with a lot of players, but you have to be so good to trump any kind of other issues surrounding you. And, you know, there's very few players like that, especially in this year's draft. So it's very interesting. You know, I guess I want to,
you want to spin to Jack or something else?
Yeah. Let's go to to Jack Sammarco here. Really, I guess, just what do you make of the addition? I mean,
superstar tight end. Yeah,
doesn't seem like, I don't think, you know, we were talking about it right before we brought you in here. I don't think me or Joe either think he's going to be overly impactful
all
from
SEC.
A statistical standpoint. But as far as just what he can bring on the field, what do you kind of make of the addition?
I mean, I can't say that I did an extensive deep dive on him yesterday, but I think we're at a point in the portal where Alabama has a couple positions of need, where they're not going to spend $800,000 to $1 million on a guy that's potentially just going to be a backup. And so I think in an interview, which apologies to whichever one of our colleagues talked to him, I think somebody, maybe it was Colin from Tuscaloosa News, talked to him and he said he's coming to Alabama because he can play right away or something. So, which, you know, I'm sure every recruit is told that pretty much. But, you know, I think it's more of like a depth piece where obviously they're thin at the position right now with injuries. And so, I mean, he did play in every game last year for them. I think he's going to be mostly used probably in a blocking role. You know, it is like a power four transfer. So it's not like he's some, you know, completely random kid. I can't think of many West Virginia Alabama connections, obviously, besides Nick Saban, but he didn't go to WVU. I think that was one of Yabby Anoma's stops with West Virginia, or am I making that up?
Ooh, that does sound right.
I think he may have gone there for a year, but I could be confusing him with somebody else. So, you know, I think this kid, they could probably get at a somewhat reasonable price, has some experience playing tight end at the power four level, and you know, who knows, he could be you know what they need to step in and play right away and kind of fill a certain role in the offense.
Kitty Windham, you are Courtney Morgan for the next 5 minutes. What else are you shopping for in the transfer portal?
It's just tough because this has been such a quiet, like,
very
window that, like, I think there's just not a ton of players available. I think maybe they would have liked to get another offensive tackle. But then that guy, it's not necessarily a starter because you're hoping that Wilkin can be, you know, that starter at right tackle. But then also I feel like Caden Proctor is injury prone. And so, you know, I think they would have liked to go get one more tackle. But then I think a lot of it comes down to the money, too, of how much are we going to pay this guy? Are we going to pay more than to get him from the portal to compete with other schools? Are we going to pay him more than some of the offensive tackles on our current roster are making? It's just like, I think that's the kind of decisions Courtney Morgan and all the NIL people have to make is like, is it worth it for us to pay this guy that might potentially be a backup, but we need the depth? But I don't know. I feel like when I was on around this time last week, there were some rumors about the punter from Nebraska, I think, that had played with Kalen at Washington. I don't even know what ended up happening with him, but I haven't seen much.
We're not going to be punting this year.
Yeah.
Ty Simpson, touchdowns and field goals. That's all it is.
Every time, yeah. Or turnovers. So, yeah, I think probably on the defensive side of the ball, they're set. But I won't be surprised if – I think they have a couple of roster spots left. But also it kind of seems like all around college football with just the uncertainty. I don't understand all the stuff that always is coming out about the NCAA rulings and D.C. and all that stuff. But I think a lot – I mean, obviously the people at the high-up administration level at schools understand. But, like, there's still so much uncertainty around college football that I think for a lot of players it's not worth it right now to get in the portal when you have a secure NIL deal at the school that you're at, that why would I risk going somewhere else when the rosters aren't, you know, fully set and they're trying to figure out, are they going to grandfather in the walk-ons? And then what is a walk-on becomes blurry when you can pay people – with NIL. So it's just a lot of uncertainty around college football that I think that's part of why you're not seeing as much portal movement this spring as maybe somewhat expected.
So that takes me, I guess, to my next question then. Is that the main reason that you think Alabama has really not seen one player? There's been one player, two players, and they were both walk-ons into the transfer portal. So, you know, not really anybody that was going to see significant time this year has entered the transfer portal. Do you think it is mainly because of kind of the uncertainty surrounding it, or do you think that it is something that this coaching staff has really figured out?
Yeah, I think it's more like the uncertainty and the guys out there, and I think it's NIL and maybe Alabama not wanting to spend a lot in this spring window when most guys that are transferring at this point in the year are probably not going to be starters, and so it's like, why would you spend a lot of money on these guys? That, you know, aren't even going to necessarily start for your team. And so I think it's, yeah, the uncertainty and then also the complicatedness of NIL and balancing the budgets and all things you would have never even thought about in college football 5 years ago.
Katie, the other day we proposed changing the pay schedule for the players to make it look like the professional schedule. The NFL, you get paid 17 game checks. I mean, whatever, your $30 million divided by 17 game checks. And so you don't get paid in the spring. You don't get paid in the summer at all. You got to wait till you're back on the roster and, you know, game check, that sort of thing. Gentlemen's agreement. Could we get all the NCAA to alter their pay schedule so that maybe these boosters don't get burned as bad?
Well, I mean, supposedly the whole thing with the House settlement is that, like, you know, it is supposedly going to be more regulated and, you know, it's not supposed to be as much of, like, or there's going to be a set amount of the pay-for-play and then the rest is supposed to be legitimate NIL deals. Now, how the NCAA is actually going to regulate that, who knows? But I think what happened with the Amaa Alava brother, the younger one of Arkansas, I think that is having a lot of people reconsider how do we pay these guys. I think some schools, for sure, I'm sure he's not the only case where people have gotten burned, and I think we've seen it, you know, in basketball too. And then, like, what is the legality if okay, you and this guy signed a deal, you gave him money to come play at Arkansas or Alabama or Texas or wherever, and then somebody else, and you've already paid him his first payment or whatever, he never takes a snap for you and goes somewhere else. Now, I think most people would say that that's pretty immoral, but it's not like people don't do that in the business world, you know, cutthroat things or things that benefit them. So, you know, I like that idea. I don't know if everyone will come together. I think it would have to be an NCAA mandate. But as long as there's these free-flying rules and so little regulation, stuff like this is going to continue to happen. Like, people are going to continue to bend the rules that exist and do what, you know, they're always looking out for number one, what's going to benefit them the most. And so I like that idea. I don't have very much confidence in the NCAA to enforce anything like that.
This is a good point. I don't have much confidence in the NCAA.
Right.
I think I'm right. You ready to spend a softball?
Yeah.
You know, it seems like the
shout out to Everett. Everett wants to talk softball.
Yeah. Shout out to our friend Everett. This is a segment for him. He's been asking us to talk softball. He got on early on the show and was like, "Where's my softball content?" So here it is. You know, we have finally gotten to the juice of the show here. I really just want to ask you just kind of what is your reaction to this week, the Florida series, and then now heading into this week. Where do you feel this team stands?
Yeah, I mean, the Florida series was almost just like a microcosm of the season, except for it was different in the fact that they won the first game of the series for the first time. You're like, oh, they are on a roll. They're going to keep this up from Oklahoma. And then game two, which was actually on Friday, they got run ruled, got it taken to them. I think really you start Caitlin Riley. She doesn't give them a great start. They fall behind. They put in Brea Hodges, true freshman, who is not pitched in a lot of SEC games. That wasn't Murph waving the white towel, but I think it was him saying, okay, we're not going to use our top two pitchers for the rest of this game. We've already won a game in the series. We could win the series tomorrow. And then, you know, Alabama, they get down 4-0. Then they have an inning where they tie it 4-4 on Taylen Hawkins' first home run of the season. And you're like, okay, like they're back in this. And then they did a in-game interview with Murph that next – in between the next half inning. And he said, we're going to ride with Brea Hodges. This is a new situation for her. We'll see what she's got. Because I personally thought that if they tied or take the lead, they would have brought Brisky in. Which, okay, so they tied at 4-4 in that inning. I can't remember now which it was, the third or fourth. But in that inning, they had the bases loaded with one out for, I think, the 4 and 5 in your order, your heart of the order. I think it was Riley Valentine and Abby Dukeshire. And I think both of them had infield pops. And so it's like, that's not what you're looking for in that situation. So they did tie it, which it was good of them to rally, but then they could have taken the lead. And then I think maybe he does actually bring in Brisky, but, and then Brea Hodges kind of gets shelled. And I think they brought in Winstead too. I don't remember now in that game.
You nailed it. I'm looking at the play-by-play. Dukeshire, Valentine, both popped up. You're on it. You keep going.
Yeah. So then they get run rolled. Okay, that game's kind of a wash. Florida's a good team. I think they're either number two or number three in the RPI. So what they were able to do in game one was great. But really in that game, they jump out 7-0 in the first inning, helped by a lot of errors, and then don't score again. So that wasn't really like a great sign that the offense didn't do anything after that. Then you get the series finale. Florida pitcher Keegan Rothrock looks like the All-American that she is. She's been injured some of the season. It's so funny. You can tell like – even the ESPN people are like so mad because they keep saying like undisclosed is injury. That's one of the things about sports like softball is that like, because there's not as much media attention, schools don't really have to say like what somebody's been injured with or even when they're injured. Like last year, Marley Giles broke her arm and like, they didn't even tell us. Like I had to like ask, like, it's not like, you know, football, it's like, or basketball first question. If there's like somebody injured, like they have to talk about it. But Keegan Rothrock has been injured for a couple weeks or at some point this season with an undisclosed injury. And Saturday she looked like the All-American she is. I think Alabama was hitless through like the fourth or fifth inning against her. Florida leads. Alabama ties it. They give up the lead again in the sixth inning. Alabama has a seventh inning rally, which is not something they've really been able to do this year. It's come from behind. And they take the lead in the seventh, 4-3, going to the bottom of the inning. And you're thinking, okay, y'all have not really proven me wrong all year. You've not been able to close out close games. Prove me wrong today. They proved me right. Like, it's just, it's mind-blowing. And I told Will when this is happening that I was going to go and look up this week how many times they've blown a sixth or seventh inning lead. And I haven't done it this week. I need to go figure it out. It's like you had that road series in your fingers. And I think if you win that series, you're in a great position to host even supers, moving to kind of a top eight seed because Alabama has a lot of losses and that's what's probably going to, you know, ultimately hurt them. But they have a great strength of schedule. They have some very quality wins because they haven't gotten swept. So they have a lot of top 10 wins. So it was something else that just kind of slipped through their fingers. And that whole inning started with something that wasn't technically an error, but Riley Valentine dropped a pop-up behind home plate that would have been the first out of the seventh inning. And then instead, Brisky ends up walking the girl, which part of that's on her. She's got to be, you know, more mentally tough and finish out that at-bat even after the mistake. But she's kind of shown this year that she's not necessarily. That was pretty much the worst way the inning could have started for her is Valentine dropping that pop-up behind home plate. And then it just kind of spiraled out of control from there. And they give up the lead, lose this game, lose the series on the road. So, but then it's like Florida's a really good team. They're a top 10 team. They're top 3 in the RPI, I believe. they're really talented, have one of the best offenses in the country. If Keegan Rothrock is pitching like she was, she's one of the best pitchers in the country. So it's not a bad series to lose on the road. It's just the fact that, like, they could have won it. Like, that stings a little bit. And so it turns to this weekend with Mizzou, who is next to last in the SEC. And so I think at a minimum, you have to win this series. And really, you're looking for the sweep. Because if you look at my kind of bracket projections to where I did yesterday, with Oklahoma and Texas in the league now, there's 15 softball teams, and all 15 are being invited to the SEC tournament this year. So the bracket is, like, kind of wonky with 15 teams. And if Alabama, they currently would be the 11th seed. That would mean they would start play on Tuesday of the SEC tournament and have to win 5 games in 5 days if they wanted to do that, which is not, you know, ideal. Softball players are used to playing that much. But, like, a team that plays on Tuesday is probably not going to win the SEC tournament, which it's been a minute since Alabama's won the SEC tournament. Not that long, it was 2021. But they've not done well the last couple of SEC tournaments. I think they
won it done last year.
In the first game of the SEC tournament, and then they did that in 2022, and they did it last year. And so I think they would like to have a little bit of run, pick up more quality wins. So anyway, this Missouri series is big. Missouri is below 500 right now, but they've beaten Oklahoma. They beat Texas A&M, who was number one last week. But you have to get to 500 to be eligible for the NCAA tournament. So Mizzou, I think, has to finish the regular season 5-1. So it's a big weekend for them. They're fighting literally for their postseason life. But Alabama, they've got to win this series at home. You cannot mess around. You can't have the errors in the field, which it seemed like they cleaned up against Oklahoma, kind of came back to bite them a little bit against Florida. They've won two of their three SEC home series so far. They have a chance to go 3-for-4 this year, which I think would be big after, you know, what happened last year. And so it's not like a must win, but it's – and because even though Missouri is next to last in the SEC, they're still like top 33 in RPI or top 30 or something. That's just how deep the SEC is. So it wouldn't be like a bad loss. It's just you have this opportunity at home against one of the bottom teams in the SEC. Like, you need to pick up some wins.
6 o'clock on Friday at the Rhodes House, 8 o'clock on Saturday at the Rhodes House, and 2 o'clock on Sunday for the weekend series, Alabama and Missouri. Katie Windham will have it covered for us at BamaCentral.com. You can follow Katie Windham at @KatieWindham_. Katie, I was reading comments over the weekend. I was getting excited. Oh, momentum. You win the first game against Florida. You take the series against Oklahoma. You're starting to build something. And then, as you've already outlined, kind of fizzled Saturday, Sunday. Basically, the comments, the aftermath comments was, that Oklahoma series win was a fluke. It wasn't that good. It was a fluke. Oklahoma didn't play well. Yada, yada, yada. Alabama got lucky. How would you settle that? I mean, obviously, Oklahoma, you did win the series here. You have a really great strength of schedule, as you've outlined. You can basically really set yourself up for a nice postseason run with a nice close to the regular season. Where do you settle this team's chances to get back to Oklahoma City once again?
Yeah, I would not say that series was a fluke or that they were just lucky. And Oklahoma didn't play great, but I think you have to give Alabama a lot of credit in that and give their pitchers a lot of credit. It's not a fluke because they've beaten good teams all year. The miraculous thing to me about that series was in game three when was Autry's home run. Did it make it 2-1 or 3-2? Whatever it was, Alabama won by one run, and it was tied for the longest time. And then I think the seventh and eighth inning was when, or maybe the sixth and seventh, when Oklahoma had, you know, bases loaded or two runners in scoring position in the other inning. I think that was kind of like the, oh, here we go again. Alabama's going to blow it again, and they didn't, and then they were able to walk it off in the bottom of the eighth. And so that was kind of that's what bucked the trend of the season, is that they were able to hang on, but they didn't really have a lead. It was tied, but they were able to have a late win and kind of close out to win the series. And so I think this team can make it back to Oklahoma City. Obviously, like, the last couple of years, they've, you know, in 2023 they made it after having, I think that was the year they had, like, their most regular season losses ever under Murph. And then last year was the first time, like, they finished below 500 in SEC play. They still made it. So I think this team is better. It's definitely better offensively than the last three teams. I think your pitching is going to be – can you beat a team because to make it to Oklahoma City, you have to win Super. So you have to win two games in a weekend. And they haven't been, like, great at that necessarily. Can their pitcher step up and give them enough good outings, good starts to win two out of three games? And that's, I think, what it's really going to come down to. But I think this team, I don't think beating Oklahoma was their peak. I don't think that's – and then the rest of the season is just downhill. I still don't think they've played their very best softball, and they can. Murph likes to talk all the time the word yet. We're not there yet. We haven't reached our best yet. We haven't played our best game yet. And I think that's true for this team. And that I think that Oklahoma weekend was a good culmination of everything clicking at once, the offense, defense, and pitching. But I think that can happen again. I think they're kind of running out of chances to prove it. But I definitely think the expectation right now is for them to at least get to Supers. And then we'll kind of see what happens from there. Because I would not have predicted them to, you know, upset Tennessee last year as the 14 seed, Tennessee being 3 and one of the best teams in college softball with two of the best pitchers in college softball, with Alabama's weakness being offense last year. So you never kind of know what kind of postseason magic Murph's got going over there at the Roadhouse.
Well, we will follow it all on BamaCentral.com. Katie Windham will be leading our coverage this weekend and into the postseason. You can follow Katie Windham at @KatieWindham_. We will chat with you again next week, Katie. Hope you have a great day.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. That's Katie Windham joining us. Thank you so much. Making us a lot smarter here on a Thursday. Mason Woods, we got to get out of here because we got to go cook big old meals for the first round of the, I mean, celebration. Beers, meals, nachos, pizza, wings.
The future Super Bowl champion, Cam Ward, will be drafted tonight.
There
you go. Everyone should celebrate accordingly.
There we go. So we're going to Walmart. We're going shopping. We're getting out of here for the day. We appreciate you guys for watching us on the Bama Central YouTube channel, on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, on listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon. Always love Derek Daniel for sponsoring the program. And Warren Tyronado, leave us a comment at JoeGaither6. Leave us a voicemail at 205-462-7340, extension 800. And we'll talk to you in the morning right here on Bama Central and BamaCentral.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's edition of the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. Keep up with Joe on all his social media pages at JoeGaither6. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and be sure to read us daily at BamaCentral.com.